So this afternoon, I would like to continue a little to look at this theme of letting go. And again, I like to continue to read some of the quotes, some passage from the Buddha's teaching. And this first one, this is before the Buddha awakened. And he's a young man, and he reflects on things. So you see, you can have some creative thinking, even before doing any meditation. And this is what he starts to think. And he says, "This thought came to me, an uninstructed worldly, though sure to become old himself, and unable to escape aging, feels repelled and disgusted when seeing an old and decrepit person being forgetful of his own situation. Now, I, too, am sure to become old and cannot escape aging. If when seeing an old and decrepit person, I were to feel repelled or disgusted, that not would be proper. When I reflected thus, monks, all my pride in usefulness vanished." To me, I like this passage because it shows that even before he started meditating, the Buddha was already quite reflective and also quite self-aware. And kind of he could see, you know, he was young and he felt full of energy, and then when he saw somebody who kind of looked a little old and decrepit, and he thought, well, you know, they're awful. You know, I am young, I am wonderful. But then he thought, hey, wait a minute, I too will become like this. So there is no real reason for me to feel great about being young compared to them. And to me, this is what I found interesting. When he said, when I reflected so smug, all my pride in usefulness vanished. And this is a letting go. It's kind of like a kind of a certain sense we have of ourselves. And often we have this strange sense of being special. This is something which I think kind of comes with being human. And we generally feel we're special. And we kind of, you know, have this feeling I am either fantastic or I'm fantastically terrible, but I am not ordinary. You know, I am special. And that feeling of being special, I think, actually leads to a lot of difficulty. Because it leads to a kind of like a lot of self-consciousness, or kind of a lot of self-centeredness. Because often this leads to us feeling we are the center of the universe. And that everything does whatever they do because of me. When actually they do what they do because of them. But they feel the same thing. So we are all this self-centered universe. You know? And it's kind of strange. It's a strange thing. And I think the Buddha here realized, in a way, there is nothing special about me being young and feeling full of energy. It's just kind of part of what is part of my condition right now. But this condition is not going to last. And to me, this is a sort of letting go that the meditation hopefully can help us to experience, to realize this feeling of dissolution of I am special. I am specially good, I am specially bad. And just this realization that we are really ordinary. For me, this was a big realization, a big letting go. Which, it's not that the letting go happened because I forced it, not at all. But the condition, the practice, made it happen. Because from a very young age, I wanted to be special, really special. I was very different. I did weird things from a very young age. You should have seen my room when I was 11. It really was different. And, you know, I wanted to save the world. I wanted to become president of the republic. I had all these kind of, you know, grandiose, special thinking. And then things happened. And then I became a nun. And becoming a French nun in Korea was, I think, the apogee of my specialness. I really really was special. All the Koreans were looking at me. I mean, anywhere I was going, as a French person being a Korean Zen nun, they were, oh, look at her! I had an article on me, and etc., etc. I was really special. I mean, I was one among 60 million in Korea, and then one among 60 million in France. I was the only French Korean nun. I was one among 120 million. I mean, top that for specialness. So I was really special. And when I stopped being a nun, due to various conditions, I had this strange experience of being in the street, wearing ordinary clothes, and feeling something is different, something is strange. And I realized nobody was looking at me special. And I thought, that's what it is, you know. And I would say, stopping being a nun was great for letting go of specialness. And over time, I started to revel. I started to actually enjoy being ordinary. I started to discover the power of being ordinary. Not specially good, not specially bad, because this is a problem. You think you are specially good, then you compare yourself. You know, you have to be up to it. I mean, if you have this image of yourself, you have to be up to that image, which most of the time you can't come up to. This is the thing with that specialness. And it's the same with specially bad. You can't be bad all the time anyway. So it's kind of like to see when we kind of let go of this self-centeredness, of this kind of like self-consciousness, then we kind of become more ordinary. And I think it's a release. It's kind of like, I'm just like anybody else. So I mean, I don't have to kind of, you know, be heroic or do anything like this. But it doesn't mean that I cannot cultivate wisdom and compassion. It doesn't mean I am not unique because of the condition that formed me. It doesn't mean that I cannot try my best to cultivate wisdom and compassion, but I think a kind of a weight is removed. And to me, I think that's what the Buddha is talking here. This pride, this self. I think it's not so much about being arrogant. Often we think of pride as being arrogant. But to me, I think the pride here is more about this selfing, this feeling of being a kind of a young man and being special because of that. But I have the fact that he realized that, no, I am just like everybody else. I am young now. I'm going to die at some point. I'm going to get old like everybody else. And I think through that too, what I think is important with this letting go is that this letting go leads to compassion. Because if you realize you are just ordinary, you're just like everybody else. And you look at other people in a different way. Because this is a problem with this specialness, this self-consciousness, is that it really makes us so focused on ourselves, which then it cuts us off from others, from being open to others. And so I would say letting go is actually this opening of the heart. And to me, this is what is so important in meditative awareness. That yes, in a way we work on ourselves. But this awareness is not just to be self-aware. I mean, you're already self-conscious. You don't, on top of it, you don't want to be kind of self-aware. Have what I call in a negative self-conscious way, because often that's what happens. You start to use self-awareness in a self-conscious way. And on the contrary, the awareness, the creative awareness, in a way, because of the letting go opening, we become ordinary, we become part of the web of life. We all together in this web of life. And then we see the importance of others. This is a problem with being special. That people go down. As we go up, they go down. But if we go down, they go up. And so we have kind of more like kind of this more like this equality. Equality in humanness. Equality in life. Then we've been talking a lot this during the discussion about thought. And I thought it would be interesting to bring this quote from the Buddha, which is about right thought, authentic thought. And he says, what, monks and nuns, is right thought? And he says, it is a thought of renunciation, the thought of non-ill will, the thought of harmlessness. So then we can see here that letting go is part of this right thought, the thought of renunciation. But it's not just renouncing. Often we have this feeling that if we renounce the world, for example, then it's in a way we're kind of going away from everything else. We have to, in a way, often there is this idea of, in renunciation, that we renounce the world because it's bad. This is bad out there, so I have to renounce it. I have to be away from it. But the Buddha said the thought of renunciation with the thought of non-ill will and the thought of harmlessness. So actually it's a state of letting go which is connected, which is interesting in the fact that we have non-aggression, and also interested in the fact that we are harmless to ourselves and to others. So it's not kind of like renunciation as in moving away, but in a way it's renunciation of feeling about ourselves in such a fixed and solid way that it's in a way estranged from others. And often in that state, we can be quite nasty to ourselves and to others. The more we remove ourselves, the more we can go into this judging position. And so I think, to me, renunciation is interesting, because it's a little, it's like letting go, renunciation. But what does it mean? And often we see renunciation as renouncing something we like, and then we'll be a good person. And personally, I think renunciation is more actually renouncing what we add to the experience, renouncing the exaggeration that we add to the experience, renouncing the expectation. Because often, look, when we want something, when we lust for something, we actually, in that, there is this huge adding we do. This is so great, this is so fantastic. If I get this, my life will be changed. I will be happy forever, or I will be respected forever, or I'll be famous forever, whatever it is you want. But what is interesting in that movement, there is this exaggeration. I'm not saying it's not a good idea to do this or that. But you see, often we really add something to it. We impute more. We put more in it. If I get the right house, if I get the right house, the right partner, the right job, the right condition. We're often looking for the... And then once we get it, we think, this is it. Then I will be sorted. The right meditation. The right teacher. I meet a lot of people who tell me when they find the right teacher, then they'll be sorted. And I'm not so sure about that. Will they find it, and will it make a big difference? You know, I mean, I had this funny experience. When I was in Korea as a nun, the special French Korean nun, I was in the taxi in Seoul, the capital, and the guy was driving like the Korean taxi drive, a little kind of crazily. But even more so, because he was going, oh, you are a French Korean nun! You're not married. This is amazing. You're not drinking. This is amazing. You're not smoking. You're not going to party. You don't have children. This is such a renunciation. You are so amazing. And I was sitting there thinking, but I don't want any of this. Like, what for him was amazing renunciation, for me was like, I don't want it. I don't desire it. I mean, there is no kind of, I'm not special about that. And so I could see how much he put into that and how much I did not. And that's what I saw. This is what renunciation is really about. In that often you actually renounce something. And when you really renounce it, it's because actually you don't want it anymore. And I think this is interesting, that letting go, which happened by itself. And it's almost not something that you force as much as suddenly the exaggeration go, and then you see the thing, and then it's more, oh yes, I could have it, or maybe not. And it's not like, oh, I must have it or I'm going to die. It's just kind of like more, again, this ordinary encounter, this creative encounter. And then I wanted to bring this, because I think this is what I thought we could do in terms of the practice, in terms of the meditation, this afternoon. And this is again, to me, about letting go. And this is what the Buddha says. If a grudge arises towards any person, then one should cultivate loving kindness toward that person, or compassion toward that person, or equanimity. And in that way, one can dissolve the grudge toward that person. So this is something which I think might happen a lot to us throughout our life, in our daily life. Something happened, somebody said something, they do something, and we think, this is hurtful, this is painful. How could they do this? I would never do this. How can they? I mean, really, who do they think they are? Etc., etc. I mean, I can imagine we have different scenarios, different stories. And so the Buddha, in a way, is saying, you know, if we have a grudge, generally, actually, the more we think about it, the more we kind of go with it, then the more we exaggerate it, and the more suffering, actually, it causes us to ourselves. Think of, you are in the office. Somebody does something, says something, does something, you are upset, last 10 minutes. And then you think, really, he did this, how could he do this? And if only he was not in that office, really, we could work. And then you think about it, you think about it, you think about it. You go home, you think about it. You eat, you think about it. You go to bed, you think so much about it, you can't sleep. But, as a person asked to be in your head, they're not asked to be in your head. You have the feeling that because of them, you're thinking of them. But in a way, you have the possibility of, in that moment, to let go of the grudge and to just see, oh yes, he did this, she did this, how can I creatively engage with that? And that's what the Buddha is saying. The creative engagement for him, the letting go, the first one we could do is loving kindness. And why loving kindness? Because generally what we do is something, if somebody does something bad, immediately we exaggerate. They always do this. And then you go back in time and you think of all the bad things they have done. And it's kind of like a laser kind of, you know, attention. And you kind of, you know, start to kind of make a list of all the bad things. They always do this. And then it's very totalizing. And the Buddha is saying, no. Loving kindness, what would it mean to have loving kindness toward the person? It would mean to realize in that moment that they might have said something negative, they might have said, done something painful, but they don't always do it. And then it would balance the thing, you would not exaggerate, and you could more creatively engage with what they really said in that moment, and not kind of trying to look at. Because often that's what you do. Somebody does something wrong, and then you start to talk to them about it, and then you don't look at what they did right now wrong. You say, but 10 years ago you did this, and then 9 years ago you did this, and the poor thing, what can they do about 9 years, 10 years ago? They can't do anything. But right now, what they did 10 minutes ago, yes, you can look at it. But if you bring the other thing, you cannot look at it. As I think it's kind of a good point, to kind of the loving kindness would make us more spacious, would make us look at the situation again in a wider way and see the positive, see also the positive quality of the person and in which way I could engage positively with that person. Because if they're bad and they so that if they're 150% bad, what can you do? Nothing. But if there is a little good in the person, then possibly you can engage in that. Then the next one. One should cultivate compassion. And compassion is realizing that there is suffering. That the person is suffering like ourselves. And it's realizing that often suffering will cause us and others to act in a negative way. Recently, I was leading a retreat, and there was this young woman who does a lot of loving kindness meditation and compassion meditation. And she said she was, you know, she works in an office, and her boss is a little difficult. And then she was going to meet her boss. He called her, "You must come now." And she goes, "Oh, the boss is calling me, and what is he going to say? This is going to be awful. He's always awful." And she thought, she realized that if she goes, she went that way, she would just become more and more tense. And she said, "No, let's do loving kindness. Let's do compassion." And so she kind of brought the boss to, he's an ordinary person. Like myself, he has some good side. Like myself, he's suffering. And the inflation just went down. And then she went inside the meeting with that spirit of just meeting this human person at this moment. And she said it made such a difference. There was no tension. There was no exaggeration. She was able to be with it, and it was fine. So in a way, to see that often what we do by fixing, solidifying, we really exaggerate, we really inflate. But if we bring it back to this ordinary level of the good quality of the suffering, and then we can engage so differently. And then there is equanimity, cultivate equanimity. And equanimity basically is about acceptance. I think often we have this idea of equanimity as if I meditate long enough, at one point I'm going to kind of float. You know, I'm going to float, and no matter what happens, however beautiful, however horrible, I will be floating. And it really won't touch me. But to me, this is not what equanimity is about. Equanimity is very much about acceptance. It's about saying, yes, this is what is happening. Because often, something happened and we say, it did not happen. I remember, you know, as a young child, breaking a vase. And then looking at the vase, kind of wanting it not to be broken. It's not happened. It's not happening. You know, kind of looking back, still broken. Like, magically, it would not be. It was kind of saying, no, it should not be. And often we do this. We say, it should not be this way. But if we go in that way, we fix, because it happened. So in a way, the Buddha is saying, if we cultivate equanimity, we cultivate acceptance. We're saying, yes, this happened. Yes, this happened in this way. But how can I be with it? How can I creatively engage with it? And to me, this is, in a way, the benefit, I would say, of the letting go. A letting go which comes from loving kindness, a letting go which comes from compassion or comes from equanimity, is that it opens things up. It really opens things up so that actually what happens, it gives us more choices. And to kind of see, I am not stuck here. This is not stuff. Maybe I can find a way to creatively engage with that. And so this is what I would suggest that we do this afternoon in the meditation. I don't know if everybody is familiar with loving kindness, compassion meditation, or equanimity meditation, but I'll just briefly go through it, and then what I would suggest is that you do one. You don't try to do all the three at once, but just so that you kind of get a little idea about this kind of meditation. So loving kind, basically the way these meditations work is that you recite sentences. And so I will kind of give you like what I call the short version, so that it will be more easily applicable. So it's kind of, you know, just the same, you sit in meditation. And then, in here, we repeat three sentences. For example, with loving kindness, may I be happy. May I have good fortune. May I be healthy. So it's kind of, in a way, being aware. It's kind of working on the awareness that there are good things in our life. And also that there are good things in other lives. So it's kind of, in a way, wishing well to ourselves. Wishing well to others. So we just recite first the sentences to ourselves. But when we recite the sentences to ourselves or to others, we try to look beyond what we might think about ourselves and others, and we try to reach out to the human being who is alive, who is breathing, who is suffering. And so in a way to see that we sending, in a way we kind of wishing well. This is also not a prayer at a distance, but it's really kind of orienting the mind, the body-mind complex in a certain way. So that then we say the sentences first for ourselves to this human being who is alive, who is breathing. May I be happy. Let's keep it simple. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be at peace. That will be easier. Because if you make it too complicated, especially for people who are kind of maybe of a different language, do it in your own language, German, Italian, French, whatever. So, may I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be at peace. And then you move to people you can bring to mind in this room. And you look beyond what you might like or dislike about them, and you reach out to the human being. And to each person in turn, you wish well. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. And then we go to everything that is outside the room. The tree, the grasses, the bird, the people, and the same. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be at peace. And then we finish with all beings. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be at peace. So that's the doing the loving kindness. Then you have the sentences for compassion. The sentences for compassion can be a little more difficult in terms that it kind of focalizes more on suffering. So it's kind of, may I be free from suffering? May I be free from pain? May I be free from difficulty? And so again, I think, in a way, not to go into what is difficult about our life, but just to recite the sentences to this person who is alive, who might be suffering. So again, you do the same thing yourself. May I be free from suffering? May I be free from pain? May I be free from difficulties? And then to people in the room, to people, to everything outside, and then to all beings. And then you have equanimity meditation. And that's an interesting one. This, and the sentence you use, the one I would suggest, is, may, here you stay with I. Just, may I accept things as they are. May I accept things as they appear. May I be stable. May I be balanced. And then we just recite that just for ourselves. And we don't go into anything else. But just for ourselves. May I accept things as they appear. May I be stable. May I be balanced. And I think the thing about this first sentence, which some people might think, wait a minute, I don't want to accept everything in the universe. And I think it's very important to see that this acceptance is not a resignation. I think often people think acceptance is resignation. But in a Buddhist meditation, acceptance is seen as actually awareness. It's kind of saying, may I be aware of things as they appear. May I be conscious of them. May I accept that they have happened. So that if I really know them, really see them, really aware of them fully, then I can creatively engage with them. Because if we don't accept, if we push away, we don't really know what's going on. And that was the exercise in the morning, to be with the feeling, to be with the thought. It was just to see what was going on. So by really knowing it, then there can be this space, there can be this creative engagement. So, what I would suggest for the sitting and the walking and the sitting, which will follow this afternoon, that you choose one of them. You choose either the loving kindness, the compassion, or the equanimity. Again, you don't have to do the three sentences. If you just want to do one, just do one to keep it simple. If you want just to stay with yourself, this is fine. If you want to go through the category, this is fine. If you want to kind of do your own thing in terms of all these three things, this is okay too. But it's just a way to kind of, in a way, look at what the Buddha says in terms of grudges. And so what you could try at one point, not the whole time, at one point you could try to bring somebody you have some grudges with, not too much, huh? Just a little grudges with, and you try to do. You try the loving kindness. The, you know, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be at peace. And then you can try the compassion. May you be free from suffering, may you be free from pain, may you be free from difficulty. And then you can try, may I accept things as they are. May I be stable, may I be balanced. And see if any of them works. And then you go back to the ordinary menu. Okay? So that's what I would suggest we do. So if we find a comfortable posture, the back is straight. The shoulders are open. And then gently we open our heart, our awareness to ourselves. Then we look beyond what we might like or dislike about ourselves, and we reach out to the human being who is alive, who is breathing, who is suffering, and we wish ourselves well, repeating silently these sentences. May I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be at peace.